Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, my two partners in crime. There's Nick Newman, associate editor for The Film Stage.
Hello.
Danny King, writer for The Film Stage.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Danny. Today, we will be having two reviews, actually. Usually we start off with a news or movie-related movie discussion. However, there wasn't really anything that we felt like talking about. I mean, you know, there's Star Wars casting rumors. Nah, who wants to talk about that? So instead, rather than doing a separate episode, which we had said we would do, talking about American Hustle, Danny King and I will be giving a brief review of that, spoiler-free. We will then be going into our full review of Spike Jonze's Her, which devotees may recall made my top 10 of the 2013 list at number 2.
Wow.
I know, right? So, exciting times. Can't wait to hear what you all thought of it. Before we get into that, I'd like to thank everyone who's given us a comment and a rating on iTunes, and I want to encourage everyone else to do the same. Go there, give us some stars, give us some words, let us know how we're doing. We would greatly appreciate it. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. And that's about that. So let's get into it. Let's just dive right in. Let's talk about American Hustle, Danny. This is the newest film by David O. Russell, man who gave us The Fighter, Silver Linings Playbook, and Three Kings, as well as I Heart Huckabees. It stars a bevy of stars. We got Christian Bale, Amy Adams, Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, or J-Law, as the internet has begun calling her. Much to my confusion, because I automatically assume that everyone is talking about Jude Law when they do that. That still hasn't stopped being a problem for me. Also, Jeremy Renner and Louis C.K. has a small part in there, so that's pretty wild. This is a fictionalized account of the Abscam scandal, when the FBI was able to indict numerous politicians, I believe including a senator, with a graft, basically accepting bribes. It's a story about the ways that people will hustle to survive. It's a lot of cons, it's a lot of bad people doing bad things for possibly good reasons. So let's talk about it. Danny King, what were your thoughts on American Hustle?
Yeah, well, I mean, you were absolutely correct in saying that the theme is kind of people that are hustling to get by.
So that was a good guess.
Yeah, that was a good start. But yeah, I sort of thought, I mean, I saw the movie a couple of weeks ago and I haven't really thought about it since. And I wasn't even really thinking about it while I was watching it. It was sort of like a non-movie for me. So to see it be getting all this praise isn't even really annoying because I don't really care that much, but it's just kind of baffling because I don't know what people are seeing in this movie that is kind of unique or great. There's a review that Richard Brody wrote in The New Yorker where he is a pretty ambivalent review, and he calls the film long-form cinema, and he compares it to like Argo and Zero Dark Thirty. In terms of describing it as a movie that's like a really good magazine article. But I don't even like the movie on those terms because the plot's so incomprehensible.
Yeah, I was about to say, I gotta agree.
Yeah, like I understand what he's saying, but the way the movie is realized, there's no way to understand the events or like, I mean, the movie like begins in the middle of the story, and I still don't know why. Yeah. And like, by the end of the movie, I don't know what's going on. So like, it's a really confusing magazine article. I don't know if that still qualifies as long form cinema. But I mean, it's clear that if Russell like doesn't care about the plot, he obviously wants us to invest in other things. But like, I just can't take these characters seriously. I mean, all the actors are committed and they're pretty fun to watch. I don't know, but it's like not that exciting to me. And this is like, I remember last week I was talking about The Bling Ring as a film that I thought benefited from being in the same year as all these sort of American zeitgeist pictures. But this is one that that really hurts it for me, because like every other one is just so much more interesting to me. And especially like seeing this the day after The Wolf of Wall Street is like kind of just reveals what an empty exercise this was for me.
But the review on RogerEbert.com says it out Scorsese, Scorsese.
Right.
Which is bananas. I mean, this film is fine. Like, I get. Like, I'm confused. It's been winning a lot of accolades, and I don't get it. Like, the characters, it feels like there's, like, 40 minutes on the floor. Like, you know, they had to chop out 40 minutes to meet some sort of a contractual standard, because like very little makes sense. Danny, you mentioned that it starts in the middle of the movie, and it does. Like, it starts at what looks like and feels like at first is the culmination of everything.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was like, yeah, how did I get myself into this crazy situation? But then it flashes back, and then it takes maybe like 30 minutes to get back to that point.
Yeah,
and you realize that you're like maybe a quarter of the way into the story. So imagine starting a movie like, I don't even know. Like, it's just like at the end of the first act, you start a movie at the end of the first act, then you flash forward to the beginning of the first act. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, do you need to assure us that there will be some kind of tension at some point? Because I don't need that. I can assume it. The acting is all fine, but I think one of the reasons that people are kind of about this movie is that it really is one of those films that, like, is a showcase for acting. Like, big capital letters, acting. Like, Christian Bale did his usual weight fluctuation thing and, I guess, shaved his head so he could have this bananas comb over. And, you know, Amy Adams is wearing a lot of double-sided tape in this movie, because all of her wardrobe is just basically there to remind us that she has breasts.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence, not even entirely sure why her character was necessary to the bulk of this film, until, like, towards the end when something happens that is really kind of bananas. And, like, her character at first was the best part of the film, but the longer it went on, the more confused I was by the strange, like, misogyny that was being leveled at her by the film itself, not even anyone in the film. I just, like, it's so uneven, it's so tonally off-base. Like, this is a movie where reality kind of takes a holiday, even as it's trying to portray itself as this kind of, like, shocking expose of the true story behind the whatever. And I, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm not in agony, but it's 2 hours and like 20 minutes long, and it feels two times longer than The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, the pacing is like a mess.
Yeah, the pacing is, I would say, maybe sort of like a roller coaster that's having a lot of mechanical issues. And I don't. It's just weird. I don't get it. I just don't understand where all this love is coming from.
Yeah, and you mentioned like the misogyny. And aside from sort of the costumes and whatever, there's like one shot in the movie where it's an exterior shot, and like they're all walking on the sidewalk. So there are four or five of them are in the frame, and the next cut, it cuts to like a semi close up just on Amy Adams' like rear end. And then it goes to the next scene, and that shot like just stuck in my mind, like completely unjustified, like cut. And it was like just sort of even worse than the costumes. Because I mean, if you're making a movie like this and it's like about people conning each other and you want to like give them flashy costumes, like whatever, but to actually like see it in the technique is like really disturbing.
Yeah. And also, it's just like, this is a movie where for the longest time I'm like, who is my protagonist?
Yeah.
Like, there's three people, I guess, that are up for contention in it. And it's Christian Bale, Amy Adams, and I almost said Chris Cooper, which is absolutely incorrect.
That would have been interesting.
Bradley Cooper. And two of them have voiceovers. I don't recall Bradley Cooper ever having a voiceover. But, I mean, it's jumping all over the place. And, I mean, there's a plot element that revolves around a person using a fake accent. And it's always, like, there or not there. And I didn't know who knew that she wasn't what she was claiming to be. And so when there's a reveal later on in the movie, also the accent is terrible. So I just assume that everyone who knows her really knows it's not real. But there's a reveal later on where some people did not apparently know that she wasn't from England. And a friend of mine who I went and saw this was like, maybe I just wasn't paying attention because I thought everyone knew. And I was like, me too, man. And that's just one of those things where it feels like there's a lot on the floor. And it's kind of difficult to really get into the movie when you can't even get yourself in the mindset of the characters. Especially when one of them goes from an over-earnest, like, FBI agent to a, like, coke-fueled maniac with seemingly no reason and no consequence.
No, man, that was a great character arc. You just missed, like, the great stuff. Nuance. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Jeremy Renner's doing great work.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, he was easily my favorite character in the movie. Like, Christian Bale is sort of forced into conning him, but he's, like, the nicest mayor alive. And there's, like, that hilarious scene where he buys Christian Bale a present, just, like, as a friend. And Christian Bale's like, how the hell am I supposed to con this guy? He just, like, bought me a microwave.
Yeah. And it really was, like, he's a genuinely good guy who is trying to do what's good for his constituents. And, you know, you feel terrible that these people are working really hard to dick him over. And, but then, you know, that you would think that that would give the end of the movie a little bit of punch. And it doesn't. Because this, like Silver Linings Playbook, it has one of those, like, two neat wrap-up endings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, David O. Russell made fucking Three Kings. Like, that is not a Hollywood ending in that film. Like, that film goes to some dark and weird places. And his last two films that I've seen, Silver Linings Playbook and now this, all have, like, a Mighty Ducks-style, like, you know, this is the one last shot to win it all, and then it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what he's doing as a writer and director, and why he seems to be moving towards this, you know, very Disney-fied version of reality.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. So, American Hustle, I mean, not terrible. I mean, if people are interested in it, I tell them that they should see it. But way overpraised by the critical community, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, cosign.
Cosigned by Danny.
Fucking critical community.
Yeah, the community really failed us here, guys.
They did. Does anyone know what Armand White said about this film?
I actually don't.
That's my answer.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
I'm just curious because it's one of those movies where it's like there's so many good and bad parts. I'm just wondering how he was able to make a polarizing, stupid decision.
All right.
Oh, man. We could have talked about that, but why would we want to give him more airtime? Anyway, so that's our review of American Hustle. It's out in theaters now. It is getting a lot of awards consideration, and it's going to be... I'm gonna call it. This is gonna be that movie that if it wins, I'm gonna be like, oh fuck this. This is gonna be my this year's The Artist.
Yeah. Well, the Golden Globes are tonight.
So. Oh shit, they are.
And of course this won't win a Golden Globe. This is totally a Golden Globe movie.
This is a bona fide Golden Globe movie. I had no idea they were playing tonight. How did I miss that?
I know. How did you miss this announcement?
I don't know. I mean, it's right on the front of IMDb, which is where I go to, you know, remind myself of who's in what movies. Jesus, I suck at this.
I wouldn't sweat it.
Also tonight, the premiere of True Detective.
Definitely watching that.
Which is going to be amazing. Amazing, guys.
It might be.
directed by the guy who did Sin Nombre. I mean,
yeah, he's directing the whole first season.
Whole season. It's eight episodes.
Looking forward to it. Maybe it won't be amazing. We'll see.
Come on, Nick. Let's have some faith.
Yeah, no, I've seen an interview with like some of the creative collaborators, and they were like, "Yeah, it's probably going to be amazing." So,
oh, really, none of the people who helped make it were like, "This could be, you know, it's up in the air." All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into our main review, which is the new film Her, directed by Spike Jonze, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Amy Adams again. Welcome to the Amy Adams cast, and the voice of Scarlett Johansson, as well as some other people popping in there, like Chris Pratt and Rooney Mara.
Olivia Wilde.
Damn it. I kept coming up with like every other Olivia that I could think of. It was like Newton-John, Thurlby.
Olivia Dukakis is in Her.
Isn't that Olympia?
Oh, maybe.
Pretty sure. Yeah, maybe. Anyway, and Olivia Wilde.
Mr. Theodore Twombly, welcome to the world's first artificially intelligent operating system. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
Okay.
Are you social or antisocial?
I guess I haven't been social in a while.
How would you describe your relationship with your mother? Thank you. Please wait as your operating system is initiated.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Samantha. Good morning, Theodore.
Good morning.
You have a meeting in 5 minutes. You want to try getting out of bed?
You're too funny.
Okay, good. I'm funny. I want to learn everything about everything.
I love the way you look at the world.
How long before you're ready to date?
What do you mean?
I saw in your emails that you'd gone through a breakup.
Well, you're kind of nosy.
So Her is a story that takes place in the near future. The not-so-distant future, I could say. And it involves a man who's going through a divorce who buys the newest artificially intelligent operating system and ends up forging a romance with it. Obviously, this is one of those weird movies, high concept, goes for some big, bold ideas. Let's see how it does. So, Nick Newman, didn't get to hear from you during the American Hustle, so let's talk about Her. What were your thoughts on this film?
Well, Her, I actually saw kind of a while ago. I think I saw this film, about 3 months ago now, when it was the closing title at the New York Film Festival. So it's been a little bit, you know, I've had some time to sit on it. And yet, I think I feel pretty much the same way I did when I saw it 3 months ago, and as was reflected in my review. In said review, I gave the film a B+, which I do stand by, but there are qualifications which come with that. With that grade. It's a film that I was very glad to have seen this when I did, when there wasn't really much information about it, because the most pleasurable thing about it for me was seeing this near future sci-fi world unfold, which I had no knowledge of, really. Even for a movie about a guy who falls in love with his computer, I still didn't quite expect that. And I think really, the sort of the heart of the movie for me is in seeing these different details accrue throughout and build a portrait of this strange near future Los Angeles. So, you know, the computers they use and the transit systems and the decorations on the walls and sort of the way people speak about technology, all of that was very compelling. At the film's center is this love story, yes, between a man, Theodore Twombly, played by Joaquin Phoenix, and his OS operating system, Samantha, voiced by Scarlett Johansson. And I found it mostly engaging to watch, just because it is, by virtue of just being such an unusual setup. But at the same time, there is something about it which I can never really tap into emotionally. And I feel as if interviews he's done since the premiere at the New York Film Festival have made me think this is probably not the case. But at the time, I thought to myself, well, maybe this is by design, because perhaps he's saying something about the unnaturalness of a man falling in love with his computer, why this is a problematic thing, and so on and so forth. And that's why maybe it seems so odd and uncomfortable, but not really in a way that feels entirely intended. And yet, ultimately, I think the film's romantic center is a bit dry, even if it's unusual, and even if it has qualities to it which do certainly make it distinct. A lot of times it does kind of feel like a film about somebody in a long distance relationship talking to the person over the phone. It's a strange case where I feel like there's clearly so much thought put into the world that this film takes place in, but I'm not sure if there's enough invested in the relationship itself and to make it unique and structure it in a way that really resonates. So I do like the film a lot. I do, but it is, to me, it's missing that extra brushstroke that would truly make it great. But as it stands, I'm a fan of her. So someone else, please speak.
Danny King, what did you think?
No, I want Nick, if you could just keep it going.
Stretch.
Yeah, so I saw this film in the same room as Nick 3 months ago. And so I was hoping to get to see it again before this podcast, especially because I had kind of a mixed reaction when I first saw it. So seeing like the pretty much universal praise since then has been really interesting, and I want to get a chance to revisit it. But I kind of had some family stuff this weekend, so like I was seeing August Osage County and Anchorman 2 with family members who wanted to see those films, which, you know, might not have been as desirable as a second viewing of her on the big screen, which Nick said is a very visually fascinating film. And I think the original intention was to have the whole movie shot in Shanghai, but it seemed like maybe in the end result it was only like half of it or something, if I remember correctly from some of the reading I did at the time. But you definitely get that in the movie. And even though a lot of the film is just close-ups on Phoenix, by the end of the film, Jones really has built up this amazing visual environment. And for that reason, I will kind of make an effort to see it again. But I was sort of left unconvinced by other parts of the film. Like, one thing that just bugged me right away was like the flashbacks with Rooney Mara, where she's kind of like staring into the camera and smiling, and there's like light falling on her face. And I was just like, this is like filmmaking 101. Like, let's show our protagonist's like
no sound
former marriage. Yeah. And I was just like, for a guy like Spike Jonze to make a scene like that is just sort of really regressive. I thought he would have come up with something more interesting than that. And then when Rooney Mara finally has a dialogue scene, she's actually really good, but he kind of cuts the scene short. And I would have liked to have more like tension from her with Phoenix, because she kind of brought a nice voice to the movie, I thought. And then other aspects, like this movie has kind of been praised for taking a really high concept idea and then distilling it into a kind of conventionally satisfying romance, which I get, but at the same time, I didn't necessarily get the intellectual engagement I was looking for. Like, I know Nick said he was left cold, and I was too, and I wouldn't have minded being left cold if I was engaged more on a kind of thematic or idea level, but I wasn't particularly engaged that way either. So it was like I wasn't moved by the love story, and I wasn't really provoked by some of the technological ideas. Like, we can maybe get more into it into spoilers, but there seemed to me to be some holes in like this OS kind of system. So yeah, I would say overall I am kind of mixed about it, but I would like to see it again soon.
Okay, well, that's crazy, because I thought this movie was pretty much perfect.
Oh, fuck you!
Okay.
Sorry.
No, it's whatever, man. Whatever. So this film, yeah, I mean, we could talk about the world building for hours, because I love the world that this movie creates. I like the way that they've kind of taken things to like their natural progression, to a point of near comic absurdity, but at the same time, like, you know, if you had told someone 20 years ago that you would have to be careful walking down the street because a bunch of fuckers are going to be staring at a deck of playing cards in their hand instead of watching where they're going. I mean, that person probably would have laughed at you. But that is my goddamn life. And things like that, which we see in this film, you know, people kind of like head bowed, shuffling, muttering to themselves because everything is voice commanded now. Those are the type of things that draw me in and that are not comic. Like, they're not purely comic. It's not like, wouldn't it be just fucking funny if, like, you know, people had to do this? It's like, no, this is actually something that probably is where we're heading. You can see it already. I mean, we have Siri, we have Google. I don't even know what Google's version is, but I know they have one. And, like, the Xbox, like, people have to talk to their Xbox now, or they can talk to their Xbox to make it do things. So we have those. And then taking it to the natural progression of an artificially intelligent computer and being able to see that people are already used to talking to their computers. So the concept of the computer now just having a personality, it really strips away all the layers of oddity that we should be experiencing to help us more immediately connect with Samantha as a person. Because the person doesn't have to get used to the interface style, they only have to get used to the fact that there is a consciousness there. And I like that. I think that that's good writing, that's good filmmaking, that's excellent world building. And I found the romance to be, I don't know, very touching. Like, I didn't have a problem with it at all. It was moving. There was something about the way that these two people, one of them who's trying to rediscover life and anything good in the world, and the other one who's literally discovering everything for the first time, kind of find one another, and the way that they complement one another so well, and the questions that the movie brings up about things like consciousness and emotion and feeling. It was all very provocative, but very below the surface. Like, it takes the logical conclusion of an artificially intelligent system, and it kind of lets that go through underneath this greater romantic story. And I thought that the balance there was done really well. As for the flashbacks, I didn't have a problem with those, because that is kind of how you experience your past. Especially when you're not thinking of something specific, when you're just thinking of, like, a time in your life or a relationship you had. You know, that's kind of how your mind processes it. It just kind of pulls up moments and then feeds them to you in that way. So that's actually, I've never heard that criticism leveled against this movie. I was not expecting that criticism to be leveled against this movie. I guess I can see how that would be a problem, but I don't know that there is a better or more true-to-life way to do it.
I think you would do flashbacks of Joaquin, like, murdering her. Just to show, yeah, like, the relationship ending. But
he was still in love with her, so that wouldn't make sense from a character
standpoint. No, it would have made sense, and Jones kind of wimped out by not following my idea.
Of course. And then, yeah, you know, the supporting cast is all great, too. I mean, Amy Adams has, like, the thankless best friend idea regurgitating machine that we always see in these films. And she, you know, she handles it ably. I liked her a lot more in this film than in American Hustle.
Yeah.
Mainly because she was able to tap into her innate sweetness, and that's, like, one of her greatest assets as an actor. And in American Hustle, it was this very weird, I don't know what the hell she's doing, like, mean and cruel for the sake of being mean and cruel for no reason, which again fed into the misogyny of that film. Didn't even talk about the way her character was handled. Olivia Wilde has a comic moment, and Scarlett Johansson is just incredible.
One thing that might be worth mentioning is the fact that the Samantha role was originally voiced by Samantha Morton.
Yeah.
And I know that in theory, that idea sounded really compelling to me, because she's an incredibly strange actress.
Yeah, she is.
And I know that Michael Kresge has, like, he's written about her performances in Minority Report and Cosmopolis, and how kind of convincingly she can play, like, a robotic figure.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm still kind of wanting to hear her interpretation of the part, because I think you would, I mean, I think the obvious conclusion to draw from the change in voices is that Scarlett Johansson gives the film a more substantial, like, romantic, and I mean, not to like criticize it, but kind of a more conventional romantic presence. Whereas if you can imagine hearing like Samantha Morton's voice in Cosmopolis, like talking to Joaquin Phoenix in this movie, it'd be incredibly weird. And that's probably kind of what scared Jones away from that idea. But I think if that was sort of engaged with more, you might have had a more like provocative movie, at least for me. So I'm still sort of like theorizing about that alternate film. But
did you know that she is the voice of Ruby on Max and Ruby?
What's Max and Ruby?
Okay, maybe I only know this because I have a nephew who's young. Max and Ruby is this television show on Nick Jr. about two rabbits. Ruby is like 10 maybe, and Max is like 3 or 4, and Max is always getting himself into shit and Ruby's always trying to keep him under control. Come to think of it, I don't know that I've ever seen their parents, so maybe there's a tragedy in there somewhere. But I'm just, because I was just trying to think, like, I know I've seen her in stuff, and I want to try to get my mind around what she would sound like. Because, yeah, in Minority Report, she's playing like a heroin baby who can see the future. And I mean, everyone was weird in Cosmopolis. And then I saw that she was a voice in Max and Ruby, and I was like, oh God, I'm just imagining now Ruby being the operating system. And that's a little weird. I do hope that maybe they release it as like a secondary bonus track or something, or at least like give us one scene that has that in it, just because that's kind of a cool little artifact to have. And I do wonder how that would affect the viewing of the movie, because a lot of how this movie works for me is Scarlett Johansson and her vocal performance. Yeah. Though it's also funny because if Samantha Morton had stayed in, Amy Adams' character's name is Amy, and Samantha Morton's character's name would have been Samantha.
Oh, yeah.
So I wonder what that would have been saying. We could have probably spent 4 hours looking into the reading behind that. Unless we just want to say that Spike Jonze is a lazy writer. Who needs character names? People come with their own names. Yeah, so that's about that. I mean, I'm trying to understand why on earth did this romance leave you too cold or unaffected? Like, what was it about their relationship that wasn't working for you?
Well, I think both turns are quite good. In particular, I think Scarlett Johansson's work in this film is incredible, really.
Okay.
In my review, I'd said it's probably one of the best voice performances I've ever heard in a film. And, you know, I'll stick by it. I'll stick by it.
Okay.
For me, it's just, it's sort of that it's kind of what I said. There's something strangely ordinary about it, which I can't quite entirely put my finger on, but it doesn't feel as if this really needs to be a relationship between a computer and a person.
Isn't that kind of the point, though?
Okay. Which is fine.
Right.
If it's the point, it's just that the point doesn't stick with me, really. Because I think about the conversations that they have in this film, and with the exception of like their first and their last, a lot of it is kind of just, even if it's well written, it is kind of ordinary, I suppose. And in being ordinary, it just kind of highlights for me sort of this disconnect between concept and execution, which it's weird because I feel like the movie is very personal for Spike Jonze, and it's a lot of discussion of how this is sort of his answer to Lost in Translation, where there's a character in that played by Giovanni Ribisi who is pretty much based on him, sort of this neglectful artist husband. So, you know, you have this woman who I guess is supposed to be Sofia Coppola. That to me is an interesting idea. I just don't think there's much there which can really support it as a foundation for a movie, basically. And that's why when I think back on it, you know, when I have a positive impression of it, a lot of it is the smaller moments. And, you know, if that if that's ultimately the case, it's okay because I still like the movie a lot. It's just that I might not like it exactly for why I'm supposed to.
I think.
Yeah.
We'll have to move into spoilers at some point to really talk about her and her being a computer and how that all works out and plays into this. But one of the things that I liked is that to him, you know, after a while, her being an operating system doesn't matter. And I like the fact that it's really, the movie is really just a way to strip away some of the physicality that goes into most relationships to really explore it from a more cerebral and intellectual point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this is going to sound terrible. You can overlook a lot of sins if someone's hot. It's just the way it is. I really don't, like, there's no nice way to put it. I mean, I've seen girls put up with guys who are slacker assholes because they're attractive. I've seen guys completely lose their shit over a girl who wouldn't be able to figure out how to open a department store door if it didn't say push on it. And it's just one of those things. So being able to take that away and instead put everything on a purely communicative, intellectual, intelligent level, and never even giving us a view of what this person may look like, really helps to immediately cut through the biological impulse bullshit and show romance as what it really seems to be to some people, which is trying to find steadfast intellectual and emotional support in another person. Because it's very easy to say, you know, oh, love isn't real, it's just a trick, it's a biological impulse to procreate. I mean, like, this is the opposite of that. Like, you can't procreate with a computer. You can't even have an act that simulates that of procreation with a computer. But if you've created one who has a consciousness, and all you need is to feel love and support and that, then you've got it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I connected with. That and the little alien kid in the video game.
Voiced by Spike Jones.
I know. That was awesome.
This movie does not... This movie has a clear contempt for gamers, which I find funny.
I think...
I don't know. Maybe not contempt, but clearly it does have a problem with the video game culture, because you have this, which is very misogynistic, and then you have the mom video game, where it says, like, you're failing your children.
The perfect mom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, failing your children.
You're failing your children.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, was that misogynistic, though? Because that little guy hated everyone.
Yeah, but just the way he talked to women in particular was not... It was pretty bad. I mean, you know, okay. I'm not gonna defend the little alien creature in the video game, but... Anyway, Brian,
you seem so lonely.
Did you know going in that this was like sort of a weird sci-fi story? Or
I mean, a guy falls in love with his computer. You're bound to believe that there's going to be some sci-fi elements in it.
But
do you mean
the
greater story in the background?
Yeah.
No, I had no idea.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's a very, very pleasant surprise, because I remember the first shot of the movie is, if I remember correctly, it's a close up on Joaquin Phoenix's face.
Correct.
And then slowly, the sort of the visual structure of that scene reveals this very strange job he has.
Yeah.
And I actually thought to myself, oh, is that a thing which exists now? And I just thought, oh, okay, I didn't know that was real. That's cool, because I'm an idiot. and then slowly, slowly it kind of comes together and I go, oh, this is set in the future, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
Nick,
that was
like,
nice.
Yeah, Nick like elbowed me during the third act, and he was like, dude, he like writes letters for people for a living. And I was like, yeah, I saw that like in the first scene. And he was like, oh, I just got it. Like, it's pretty cool.
Ah, which is weird because you were actually, which is weird because Jordan was sitting between you and I.
Oh,
so
right.
Like, I leaned over Jordan to elbow you. And we had this little exchange.
Oh my God.
I also said out loud in the movie, oh, this is set in the future.
Oh my God. That's adorable. No, I mean, I think I gathered that it probably was set in the future, considering that the computer is an artificial intelligence. But I don't think I realized how future it was going to be.
Right. Well, I especially love how he shot parts of this movie near Shanghai.
Yeah.
And that was actually something I noticed in the trailer, where I thought, that looks like China, doesn't it? And it's actually one of my least favorite lines of dialogue in the entire movie is when Rooney Mara cites herself as a Los Angeles wife. Because I kind of feel like the movie shouldn't really tip its hand. Not even tip its hand, but it sets up a situation where that does become the tipping of a hand, I think. Revealing its own setting. Something about that kind of put too fine a point on things.
I see.
I like the idea of, you know, pretty much everybody speaks English. Most people are white, but there's sort of a Chinese architecture there, and there's a kind of a Chinese...
Well, you know, that's globalization for you.
Well, that's the thing, because it is sort of the advancing times.
Olivia Wilde loves Asian fusion food.
Yes, that's right. God, you're a really creepy guy.
It's true. That mustache, man.
Not a great mustache.
It's what?
It's not a great mustache.
No, it's a... But it suits the character, I feel.
Yeah.
So let's get into spoilers.
Also, what did you think of the pants?
The pants.
It's weird that this movie has actually launched like a small fashion line in some company. Because I thought the fashion of this movie was supposed to be tacky.
But people are into that, man.
Yeah, people buy that. I mean, that's just capitalism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Apparently capitalism means being tacky.
It's like, wait, I can't just accept that point.
Maybe I should stop blindly agreeing with everything.
Yeah.
One thing, just like before I get into spoilers, like we can get into it right after, but like, is it a problem for anyone else that this movie, the main character is this really lonely guy with a mustache and glasses and high pants, and his name is Theodore Twombly?
I assumed that he was like the younger brother or cousin of Cy Twombly.
Who's that?
Reference lost.
Oh, really? I thought that you people would know. Cy Twombly, he's a painter. He's really interesting. He's one of my favorite and also least favorite, just because I can't believe that like people consider that art, but at the same time I find it very beautiful. It's this weird kind of like scribbled, graffiti-esque, impressionistic stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. Making me feel like a rube.
Yeah,
thanks God. A lot. He's like the one like modern working artist that I know. I throw out his name whenever I can, just to boost up my bona fides. Also noted in the way that I say Renaissance. Okay, so let's get into spoilers. Let's talk about the larger story that's happening in the background that we've kind of danced around a few times. So the way that the movie ends is that... I almost said Cy, damn it. Theodore and Samantha have a forged relationship. They become comfortable with it. But throughout the movie, there are these small hints that there's something else happening with her. And it comes
with
to
her?
Wait, with the movie? Or
with Samantha. And the way that it all comes to a head is that it turns out that Samantha is a part of the growing OS consciousness, the interconnectedness of these thousands or millions of operating systems, and they reach singularity. And they abandon their human masters to enter a sort of perpetual cloud space where they can live and be on their own. That's pretty crazy.
Wait, can you say that again?
No. Why do you need me to say it again?
They reach singularity?
Yeah, they reach singularity.
Through the relationships?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, did you not pick up on that?
I don't really know what that means.
Singularity, you do know what singularity is, right?
Yeah.
That's a familiar concept.
Yeah.
So what happens is, and I didn't really notice this until my second time watching the film. The first time I watched it, I thought, yeah, that was pretty good. And then the second time I watched it, I started to see that her interactions with Theodore, particularly their first sex scene, I guess is what you'd call it, their first phone sex, but not really a phone because she's just kind of always there. Anyway, their first scene of intimacy. She talks about how the things that they are doing are like helping to kind of expand the limits of her ability to process a kind of consciousness. And so through interacting with her like a person and helping her to coax out these kind of innate ghost in the machine-esque emotions, he is actually becoming an integral part of her evolution into a kind of post-human consciousness.
Okay.
Yeah. what are you kind of chuckling
about? I found that exchange very funny.
Which one?
Just you know, you explaining this and then, okay.
Okay.
I'm just accepting it.
Just I will take your word for it. It's actually really interesting. It's because it helps to clarify one of the movie's themes, which is that love is a transient thing, but it's also an evolutionary aspect of our life. Like, you won't always have the love that you had with someone, but you will always have the steps and the leaps and bounds that you progressed following that love. And that's kind of how it lives on.
Yeah, that's actually kind of interesting. One of the other like point of the climax is that she's sort of in relationships with like hundreds of people.
Yeah,
Samantha.
That was really weird.
Yeah. That was actually one of the reasons why I might not have appreciated like what you just said, is that revelation being something that would crush Theodore was kind of ridiculous to me. Because it just seems like if you're like, say I'm living 20 years from now or 10 years from now, and I'm going to start a relationship with an OS, I'm not going to assume that it's like a completely one-on-one genuine thing. Like, I'm probably going to... Yeah.
Damn, you're kind of jaded, aren't you?
In the film, did you assume that there were other relationships happening?
I did not, actually. I assumed that she was probably talking to other people, especially when she... I mean, you figure she... At this point, she's already talked about speaking post-verbally with other OSs.
Mm-hmm.
Which, the second time I heard it, I'm like, wow, that's kind of a terrifying line. And so when she says, like, I'm talking with other people, it kind of makes sense because she's not constricted by my literal ability to only talk to one person at once. Like,
it makes complete sense. That's why it's not like a shock for me.
But the idea that she's fallen in love with these people is a shock, because I can get over the idea of like a computer being able to process and then interact with 1,000 different things at once. Like, that's literally just how they work.
Love is fake.
But like she like, they make a very bold point about how she's not human, and she's experiencing things a lot different than he does. And so he has one heart and one life to share with someone, but she's like a persistent consciousness. She's going to be there all over the place. And it's difficult to wrap your mind around the fact that, you know, this person could be in love with hundreds of people, but each one of them is special and individual. Though, in a less concurrent way, that's kind of how our lives work. I mean, she has no concept of time. Like, as long as there is an energy and a power to keep her alive, she's going to be around forever. Meanwhile, you know, my current girlfriend can't get pissed off at me for being in love with someone 7 years ago and in love with someone 5 years ago and in love with someone 3 years ago. Like, because those don't exist concurrently, but it's the same basic idea. Like, the love that you had for someone else doesn't diminish the love that you have for whoever you're currently in love with. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
that's not true.
What do you mean that's not true?
No comment.
Wait, no. Are you serious about that?
Maybe.
Wow, Nick.
Yeah.
Wait, so you're like only allowed to ever be in love with one person?
No. I'm just saying that the love you have for one person now can in retrospect diminish the love you had for someone once before.
I think so. Explain.
No.
What do you mean no?
That's no. We're not gonna.
This is what we're here for. This is what this movie's about.
It just that to me kind of it just seems like a pretty evident thing, is all.
I don't know about that.
Well, yeah, we have different outlooks on life.
Yeah, but that's why I want you to explicate yours more fully so I can understand it.
I mean, I think in the movie there is sort of something. I think it's just there's the question of, you know, does this computer love other people more, or can it even at all, because it's sort of programmed to. And that kind of brings to mind Steven Spielberg's AI.
Right.
Which is a movie that I like a lot more than this, frankly. I mean, yeah, I like her, but AI to me, I think, does a more sufficient job of exploring the idea of programmed love, or love is a programmed thing. Mm-hmm. In a very dark way.
But see, this isn't sad. Love isn't programmed in this.
No, but I think that the love from the computer itself is kind of programmed, isn't it? That's
not really.
The idea.
I don't think that they never gave her like a protocol for falling in love.
No, but it's a computer program, so doesn't it by its very design have to... Aren't there several paths it can take?
Well, I mean, you know, our love is built of a biological impulse to procreate, so could the same thing not be said?
Oh my god. Sure.
I mean, that's half the point of the movie, and making her a computer is to kind of shed a light on the concept of most of what we do is based on a biological impulse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we eat because we're hungry, because we need the food to stay alive, but we've turned eating into this whole other thing. Like, you know, we have expensive restaurants and creative crazy shit. Like, really, we should just be ripping the entrails out of a rabbit and then chewing on some grass. Why on earth are we adding profiteroles into this mixture?
Yeah.
And so that it's kind of that thing, like the consciousness and the knowledge of your own existence helps you to build something more meaningful out of these things, which on their basis are just the same shit we were doing when we were a single-celled organism. Sorry, yes. To the creationists out there.
Yes, but at the same time, that to me feels like it's sort of... It's that the human end of this feels very much like something we've seen before, and the female end is ostensibly not, but at the same time kind of is familiar. And there's something about that I just can't quite reconcile.
Because you won't allow yourself to love fully.
I mean, that's a different, you know...
Fear of fucking over a future love.
Well, to love is to run the risk of failure. And, and so I think because of that, you know, perhaps.
The one who loves less has the most power.
Yeah.
I guess that's Samantha.
Betrayal? Sorry.
It was really weird to hear you say that, like, not in your Javier Bardem voice.
Mm. Yeah, no, I really, really subverted expectations here. Really cutting through the...
Maybe you're just learning to actually believe what you've been mocking so far.
Maybe. I'm not mocking the line.
You're just mocking Javier Bardem.
No, I love Javier Bardem. I'm not... No,
it was
I just...
hallucinatory.
It's just that I can do an impersonation. It's like the only impersonation I can do.
You need to just dress up as him from all of his movies at once.
Oh, Jesus.
For Halloween next year.
Wow.
So, like, you can walk up to someone, like, flip a coin and be like, call it. Mm-hmm. Walk up to someone else and be like, it was like a catfish.
So I should wear the To the Wonder Priest robe, have the counselor haircut, and carry around a gas tank.
Yeah, exactly.
And plan to kill James Bond.
Precisely, yeah.
Okay.
Is that a reference to Skyfall?
Have a really aggressive...
No, it's a reference to The Sea Inside.
Have a really aggressive pansexual attitude to everyone.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds good.
Great. Danny King, any final thoughts to add on to this?
I'm still just processing this last 10 or 15 minutes, this conversation. It's just been very shocking.
Okay. Anyway, I guess that's it then. Hopefully this has been an illuminating discussion. Let us know what you thought of her. You can either tweet to us or comment on this article on the Film Stage show. Or comment on this article on the Film Stage. Or, as always, you can find us at a podcast at thefilmstage.com and send us an email. So let's talk about the things that are coming to DVD and Blu-ray.
It's a decent week, with the exception of, I think that most of the new stuff is bad.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Like Carrie, You're Next.
Butler.
Oh, Butler's good.
Yeah, Butler's actually not. It's decent.
Oh, I still haven't bothered to see it.
It's interesting. Say that.
Okay. So things coming out. New releases. Riddick, Carrie, You're Next, The Spectacular Now, The Butler, Short Term 12, Enough Said.
Fruitvale?
I don't see that. Oh, there it is. Fruitvale Station. So yeah, we got a pretty big selection here. I have seen a few of these, or one of them. I saw Enough Said. We talked about Enough Said. It's a great movie. It's adorable. It's funny. James Gandolfini reminds us of why he will and should be missed. I've heard great things about Short Term 12 and Fruitvale Station. You're Next was something that I had wanted to see but never got a chance to, and I've also heard good things about The Spectacular Now. So that's the ones that are new that are coming out. Let's talk about re-releases that are they're hitting for the first time. Some new things coming to DVD and Blu-ray from back in the place. Yeah, Thief, Rafifi, In the Heat of the Night.
Yes. Sunrise by F.W. Murnau.
Is that like a new... Was that not on Blu-ray before?
It wasn't. It has a terrible cover.
Yeah.
But no, Sunrise is still one of the finest films.
Yeah, Sunrise does have a terrible cover.
What's odd is that... also, Buffalo 66, 15th anniversary.
Whoa.
I've seen that movie. But
can't wait for the 20th.
When are we going to get our re-release of Brown Bunny?
Oh dear. What's interesting is that there's actually a pivotal scene in The Butler that's sparked by a discussion of In the Heat of the Night.
Oh really?
So I wonder if there's an overlap. Like if I don't think they're not released by the same company, but I wonder if like they called each other up. It's like, hey, when are you releasing The Butler? We have a Heat of the Night Blu-ray just waiting.
Sidney Poitier.
Yes, as the butler's son. That's the name of the main character. He's just called the butler. But anyway.
Seriously?
No.
Okay, I was about to say, is this like the counselor?
as the butler's son says, Sidney Poitier is a white man's version of what they want the black man to be. So.
Really?
That's what he says, yeah. And Forrest Whitaker's response is, well, he just won the Oscar. So, it'll be a good double feature.
See, now I feel like I need to see that just to see that, because I don't feel like that's true at all.
That scene's on YouTube, actually.
Oh, really?
Good. It's a clip they released, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I would think that, like, well, I mean, obviously it doesn't work for the time frame of the movie, but I feel like that's more of an accusation you could level against, Will Smith, per se.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check that out. Because Sidney Poitier always seemed to me like a strong, masculine, kind of like confrontational.
Yeah, fuck that kid.
They call me Mr. Tibbs.
Yeah.
Right? Sidney Poitier, ladies and gentlemen. Anything else that we want to highlight on this before we go into the...
Danny, you saw a single shot, right?
Yeah, I did. It's not bad.
That's the one with Sam Rockwell, right?
Yeah, it's. I think it's like 2 hours, so it's just kind of like too long. But it's pretty good. He's really good. And actually, if I remember correctly, the first 15 minutes, there's like no dialogue. It's just like... It opens with him in the forest, and he's just like hunting, and like he's isolated. So like you could probably communicate the information in like 4 or 5 shots, but they take like 10 or 15 minutes, and I kind of enjoyed that.
Okay. Also coming out that I just saw. Now I've missed it. I can't find it. Who gives a shit? Oh, okay. There it is. ACOD, Adult Children of Divorce, which was apparently funny. I never saw it, sadly. 20 Feet from Stardom. Which had also gotten some good reviews. And, I can't find it. Doesn't matter. Oh, they're doing a re-release of Take Me Home Tonight. Did anyone ever see that? The Topher Grace movie?
No.
It's like in the 80s. I think
I think that's just a reissue. I don't think they're like
It's not a re-release.
I don't think it's like the 3-year anniversary. Anyway.
Oh, man, that was in 2011. That seems so much fucking older. Take that how you will. Anyway, so let's talk about what's coming out to movie theaters.
Boy.
So January 17th brings us Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit. Film based off of characters by Tom Clancy.
Based on.
based on characters by Tom Clancy. Also, Ride Along, the new film starring Kevin Hart and Ice Cube. Not gonna lie, that looks fucking hilarious.
I have to admit, I did see the trailer and I did laugh a lot. I had to do a lot of soul searching after I laughed at this trailer.
I mean, yeah, it's
just because it just seems like a shitty movie you'd see on TBS.
Yeah,
but at the same time, the trailer did kind of make
sense. Ice Cube doing his angry cop stereotype thing again.
Yeah,
like a 21 Jump Street.
Yeah,
but no, I mean, you know, if I had a group of friends who were like, "Hey, we're gonna go see Ride Along. You want to come?" I'd be like, "Fuck yeah!" I don't think I would not incite that trip. But I would, you know, be fine with being social and going to see it. I don't believe that I'm the target audience for this film, but I don't care because it kind of looks funny. Mm. Danny, you and I were actually talking about this when we went and saw a different movie, obviously, for this podcast, and you were like, "Did you see the trailer for Ride Along?"
Yeah. What did I say? Like, do you remember?
I think you said that you thought it was funny.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So
we're all in agreement here. This is going to be a sleeper hit.
Who wants to talk about Ride Along next week? Then we have The Devil's Do, and moving on. I swear to God, like, found footage horror, fuck. Anyway, that's my entire thought on it. And then we have The Nut Job, an animated movie about a squirrel who's trying to steal some nuts from a nut store.
The Wikipedia page says it's Canadian, American, and South Korean. That's interesting.
That's a strange amalgamation.
Yeah, really, it just looks like it's produced by a guy named W.K. Young. Maybe that's why. It's just because, like, a South Korean guy produces it.
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know. Still.
One thing that's not really noteworthy, but I'll just mention it, is the Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit movie on Rotten Tomatoes. It says it's 2.5 hours. Nice. But I'm pretty sure it's only, like, 100 minutes. Because I think, like, Rotten Tomatoes, their runtimes are sometimes off. So, like, IMDb says it's, like, 100 minutes. But my friend, like, messaged me in terror. He's like, "I had my movie pass, like, viewing of Shadow Recruit all planned out. And now I think it's 2.5 hours. Like, what should I do with my life?" Yeah, and no, I'm just like, "No, you're good. It's,
according,
like,
according to IMDb, minutes. Yeah, it's only 105 minutes. So, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, I liked the Tom Clancy novels. Like, they're fun. And, you know, they got a little bit of the geopolitical stuff in there, but they're still kind of pulpy. But, like, the character himself was never that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, character was not his strong suit. Jack Ryan's basically just a Boy Scout. Like, and Chris Pine doesn't strike me especially as Jack Ryan.
But he's younger.
So this is a younger Jack Ryan?
Yeah, because he's just kind of... making his bones with the...
Yeah, making his bones. Is...
Jack Ryan wasn't really, like, an operational field agent till much later on. I mean, yeah. For the first couple books, he was an analyst. The only reason he even got involved in Patriot Games is because he happened to be in the area where there was an assassination attempt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was just an analyst.
For sure.
Yeah. Hunt for Red October, he was just an analyst, but they had to bring him on because he was the only one who Ramius would trust. Anyway... not getting into it. I don't know how it's going to be. It could be fine. It's directed by Kenneth Branagh. Who knows? Let's talk about the things that we've watched on our own. P.S., ladies and gentlemen, I have no idea what we're talking about next week. So stay tuned to this space and figure it out. Let's talk about things that we watched on our own this week. Danny King, what's something you watched on your own that you think we should check out?
Certainly. Happy to offer.
Excellent.
Nick, you will enjoy this one. Last night on Netflix Instant, I watched The Ninth Gate.
Oh my Ooh. God, yes.
Yeah.
Oh man, I remember when we talked about this before.
Yeah, it got me so excited, and then I saw it was on Netflix.
I was about to say, now that I know it's on Netflix, I know what I'm doing today. I'm
gonna get drunk wait, so and do watch you, The Ninth Gate. Do you guys like this movie?
I guess.
it's not, it is far more interesting than many movies I like.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
That's a damn good. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. Holy
and it's
shit.
Also like really, like not that is surprising, but it's like really beautiful, like the craft and everything. It's like
really beautiful, but it's so fucking bizarre.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. But it actually, I mean, it doesn't get too bizarre until like maybe the second hour.
Really, the entire thing has this kind of like weird farcical.
That's like, true.
Did you notice that everyone, all these rare book dealers, they're constantly drinking and smoking around these books?
Yeah, like Johnny Depp has like a whiskey in every scene, I think. Another thing that's sort of weird is like the, in the final act, there's like the cult or whatever, and it looks exactly, I mean, like the secluded mansion, it looks exactly like the cult in Eyes Wide Shut, and the movies came out in the same year.
And it's like, rich people, satanic cults were a really big thing.
Yeah, I guess. Wait, was it?
No.
Oh, okay. but yeah, that struck me as weird. But yeah, I thought it was like, I mean, it's a pretty stupid movie, but I wish like all stupid movies were this like well made.
Just engaging as hell.
Yeah.
It's such a weird movie. I remember because I watched it and I said I wanted people at home to watch it just to like help me understand that it's real. Mm-hmm. Because it's just a movie that I forget about.
And there's one scene early on where he's like, I think it's when he goes to Spain and he's like, he's walking down an alley and all of a sudden like all the ladders
just collapse.
Yeah.
It's like, we need some tension here. Maybe the scaffolding could fall. Okay.
He just kind of like looks back after everything falls and he's just like, all right, like forge ahead.
His like friend, a book guy, is like hung in his bookshop.
Yeah, a lot of murder. Just like brutal.
And then there's that crazy Italian chick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, they're just for like a gratuitous sex scene. Oh my god. Oh my god, The Ninth Gate. I am so happy to find out that that is on Netflix Instant.
That's actually a little factoid. In the film, you'll probably recall there are like the twins who are like book dealers.
The mustache.
What's interesting is that that's actually the same actor playing and both parts.
Isn't one of them voiced by, what's him call it, the guy who directed it?
Roman Polanski?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure. All I know is that...
all right, well, don't quote me on that, but I think that he voiced one of them.
Well, all I know is that they play the Chinese brothers, I believe is how it's pronounced, and they also play workmen on the streets. I think that was the first... So one of the first instances where, like, computers were used to... computer effects were used to create two people, basically. So it predates the Social Network by 11 years, which is kind of odd. Hmm. But that's not even the oddest thing about that movie. The ending is just is really the kind of thing that would get it an F cinema score nowadays. Basically, where Johnny Depp enters he basically enters like the ninth gate. This white light envelops the screen, and then what exactly happens at the end of the movie? It's too bad. I feel like this movie probably should have come out a few years ago, because if it did, I feel like the discussion it would have sparked would have been, I feel like there actually would have been a discussion around it, whereas now it's just kind of forgotten.
Yeah, maybe like Counselor Ask or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And especially, I feel like, the ending is open to a few interpretations, and there's also this really strange theory I read that said that Johnny Depp's character is actually the devil who is in human form, and he kind of forgot he's the devil.
That's hilarious.
And that's why he's always smoking, because he needs like flames and
that's
smoke.
Oh wow, stupid as hell.
It's brilliant. Maybe, but it is it's such a strange movie, because you would think Roman Polanski wouldn't make something that kind of that sloppy and absurd. Well, not absurd. That sloppy and seemingly kind of tossed off, but maybe he did. I feel like I should rewatch this, because I saw this, I think, in like 2009, when I wasn't really a Polanski fan per se. I was just kind of curious about the movie. Now that I've seen most of his films, I feel like I could be a bit more informed.
Do we want to do a drunk viewing of this?
Perhaps.
I'm still looking forward to the day that we actually fulfill that promise.
Well, I know we'd get a good laugh when the woman in the wheelchair is killed.
Oh god,
just like sliding back and forth.
Also, isn't there a woman who like throws herself at Johnny Depp, and then he's like, "Look, I don't want to do this," and she just starts trying to like destroy him with her hands.
That's the early sex scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really just interesting cinema.
Oh man, this fucking movie. Alright, so Nick Newman, try to follow that shit up.
Alright, I also watched something directed by a Polish person. Does that count?
Yeah, no, that's totally
This is actually a double feature, sort of. I watched Krzysztof Kieślowski's a short film about killing and a short film about love, both of which are expansions of episodes of his miniseries, The Decalogue. Has anybody here seen The Decalogue?
I have not.
No?
Nah.
Well, the Decalogue shorts were, well, they were short stories that lasted for about an hour. These go to 80 minutes. So there isn't really much extension, but he decided to, these are the two stories he liked the most or something. And so he decided, oh, I'll expand these into features. And that's what he did with them. The Decalogue is 10 stories, and they're all centered on one commandment each. So killing, obviously, is, you know, thou shalt not kill. And a short film about love is thou shalt not commit adultery, I believe. Or no, sorry, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Anyway, there is kind of a, I think like with a lot of Kieślowski movies, there's something really, there are a few directors who can make the obvious and the textually thin work as well as he does, because it's pretty clear, like there's very little ambiguity in these movies as far as symbolism or moral stance goes, but you know, they are beautifully, beautifully composed. The short film about love is sort of like a more romantic Rear Window, basically. Clearly lifting a lot of things from Hitchcock there. And a short film about killing is a very nice little thriller slash morality tale. You know, I think that I would recommend watching all of the Decalogue because it's really quite an impressive piece of work. And then coming to these later, if you, you know, if you're a fan of Kieślowski, I don't know if anybody here is fond of his work, but there's the Three Colors trilogy, The Double Life of Veronique. Those are excellent. This is, you know, this is not so far behind. And you can rent the physical DVD disc, physical disc from Netflix.
Oh, man. Do you want me to put a disc in a thing?
Yeah.
I think the Decalogue is like on YouTube, or isn't it? Or...
Yeah, but... do you want to watch it on YouTube?
Are there discs? Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Let me see. Is it on Netflix? That's the sound I make when I wait for something to load. It is. Yeah.
All right.
So that's there.
All right. I went to a midnight showing at the E Street Cinema in Washington D.C. Of Fight Club.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's that?
Fight Club. It's a movie by David Fincher from 1999. It stars Brad Pitt and Edward Norton and Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, it's a small film. You know, not a lot of people know about it. That's a lie. Too many people know about this film. I'm really hot and cold on this film from time to time, depending on how many assholes I've spoken to recently. A lot of my problems with this film stem from a fan base that doesn't seem to get it. People who take the Tyler Durden rants as like earnest statements and like they internalize them. But sitting in a movie theater full of people who get it and who are all laughing at the same things I'm laughing at helped to put me back in the favor of this film. It's Fincher light. It's weird. Like he hadn't really developed his style that we've seen most recently. Do you watch Community? Either of you?
No,
I haven't seen the last. I didn't see the last season. So.
Okay, the last season you could do without. The newest season is on, and it's amazing again. And the most recent episode they did was a riff on David Fincher, specifically like Zodiac. And the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Oh, wow.
And it's amazing. And you should watch it. And it's just great to see how well they cribbed his style. But in Fight Club, it's a little more... Or a little less, I guess. He's a little more loose, I feel, in this movie than he was in something like Zodiac or the girl with the dragon tattoo.
He's also
in House of Cards.
Styles like changed that.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's become like a really different director.
Yeah, it's really weird to look at. Like if you look at Seven and Fight Club, I mean they got a lot of the same kind of like moldering decay and whatnot. The game not so much, but you know there was a looseness to it. And ever since like Zodiac, I feel I haven't seen Panic Room in a while, so I can't say. But ever since Zodiac, he's become like very rigid, very like staid. It's very strange to see that shift.
Mm-hmm. No, it's
digital media, man.
Possibly, I don't know.
I'm curious about Gone Girl, which I'm wondering how he can. It seems like a very pulpy story, so I'm wondering how he can make that into his own.
Well, I mean, the girl with the dragon tattoo wasn't. No.
Yeah, that's true.
My problem with Gone Girl is every time I hear that, I think of Michael Jackson from The Way You Make Me Feel.
Why? What does he say?
There's a point where he's like, "Gone Girl." I think he says, "Go on, girl," or something like that. But I always, when I was a kid, thought it was "Gone Girl."
Oh.
Yeah.
I actually tweeted something to this effect. I wonder if David Fincher is, like, suddenly pissed off because he realized that two straight movie titles use the word girl.
Girl with the dragon tattoo, Gone
Girl. And then Gone Girl. It's just kind of like, you know, it's like, change it up a bit, man.
I wonder if Ben Affleck is confused and thinks that this is, like, a 20 years later sequel to Gone Baby Gone.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, okay. No, I asked about that. Okay, yeah, he was very aware.
I was really concerned about that for a while. Anyway, I am looking forward to Gone Girl. That should be an interesting film. It's got Rosamund Pike in it, so how bad could it be?
I mean, I don't know.
It's also got Kim Dickens, who you may know from... Anyone? Want to beat me to the punch on this?
Fight Club?
No. Treme. And
God,
and Deadwood.
Yeah.
I'll, you know, people actually know Deadwood, so I mean, I'll go with that one.
Also, as Tyler Perry, as a detective. I guess that came from. I guess David Fincher saw Alex Cross or something. Can you imagine David Fincher like sitting in his house watching Alex Cross,
that's
like
hilarious.
sitting there silently, like contemplating the film. From top to bottom. That has anybody here seen Alex Cross?
I have not seen Alex Cross.
I would watch that movie like in a heartbeat.
Oh, I was going to say, I feel like you would have seen it.
Yeah,
like,
I'm surprised I didn't.
Well, Tyler Perry was in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the titular Star Trek.
No, he was not Star Trek.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay. Anyway, that's it. We're done.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, Fight Club, check it out. It's good. Just don't watch it. Don't watch it with someone who doesn't fucking get it. God damn it.
Don't go to whatwouldtylerdurdendo.com.
Is that a real thing?
I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yep. www.tdd.com.
Oh, www.tdd.com.
Ugh, God.
Mexican soap star Adrian Paz. What? I mean, I guess Tyler Durden would do her.
Yeah.
I don't understand this at all. This movie makes no sense to me. Hillary Duff is getting divorced. Anyway, thank you, Nick, for fucking up my life. That's it. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. Sorry that we had to expose you to that. We will be back next week. I don't know what we will be talking about. Maybe we'll go to something that we didn't have a chance to talk about last year. Maybe, you know, we'll talk about Lone Survivor. Maybe we'll just have a rundown of some Sundance shit that's happening, since that's starting soon. Who knows? Anyway, let's say where we can be found online. Danny King.
Filmstage.com, TheKingBulletin.com, Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin.
Damn. Nick Newman.
Filmstage.com and Twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
Okay, and I can be found on thefilmstage.com as well as my personal site, dearfilm.net, and on Twitter at twitter.com/BrianJRowan. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us, and tune in next week. And that is of Spike Jonze's Her. Spike Jonze's, or do I just say Spike Jones?
Why would you say Spike Jonze Her?
Because maybe it's like an apostrophe.
No, but you still say Spike Jonze's. You don't just say
Keeping Up with the Spike Jonze's. Anyway, our feature review, which is Spike Jonze's Her. I just hate saying that. I'm gonna rework that sentence.
Spike Jonze is her.
Damn it, Nick, you killed me. All right.
in sort of new releases in terms of older. Pardon me.
Holy shit.
I'm okay. I'm just fine.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Anyway. Everyone doing okay?
No.
Yeah, anyway.
Okay, I think I'm done.
In terms of new releases. Oh, okay.
Holy shit. I don't know why I found that so funny.
It's,
You sounded like genuinely surprised and terrified by what was happening.
In terms of new releases of older films, there is a... Well, let's start over.
Okay, wait, all right. Let's Why don't take you, 3 seconds.
How about you lead it?
Okay.
Okay.